So tonight I want to talk about anger and fear. Pretty basic experience. Is everybody familiar with anger and fear? Mostly I want to start with fear because I think, let me just back up a little bit. I think that one of the things that's happened in our culture, and certainly even I think an insight in sort of Buddhist communities in general, is that there's sort of been a little bit of a war that's been declared upon difficult emotions like anger, fear, sadness, sort of the emotions that you don't want to feel, you know what they are. And that to some degree we've declared a war on these experiences. And we've also, we can get kind of pulled into this delusion that if we were meditating well and we got good at this shit, they would go away. Right? I don't know if you have that attitude or have seen that. It's a kind of a trap. You know, anger and fear are not going anywhere. They are certainly here to stay. And so I want to start with fear because I think of the two, I think anger gets the more bad rap. Fear is a little bit more socially acceptable, I guess we can say. You know, and fear is primal. Fear is probably one of our oldest emotional experiences. It's a huge part of our psychological experience. I mean, how many thoughts do you have every day that have a color or a filter of some sort of fear? Something's going to happen, something's not going to happen. I'm not going to be okay, it's not going to be okay. You know, all the way down to, you know, somebody dying, to fucking being scared of getting a parking ticket. Like, the range is huge. And so, you know, fear, you know, really, the way that we experience fear, we all experience it very subjectively. Like, we can talk about fear objectively, but it's so learned in our memory system. And that, you know, it really encompasses the three times. It's past, present, future. It's always, you know, the way that the perception of the mind, one of the aggregates of the mind, perception, which is basically how we understand anything in every moment, is constantly looking back at all of the things that have happened in the past that were scary, painful experiences we've had, losses we've had. And the mind, of course, doesn't want any of those things to repeat, right? It's like, I don't want that to happen again. I'm sure you have a list of things you would like to not have happen again, right? And that's part of your memory. And then any time at the present moment, we experience that fear, or we're like, oh, I'm afraid this is going to happen, I'm afraid that's going to happen. What we do now is we go into the future and we try to make some choice or some decision or figure out what am I going to do to make sure that that doesn't happen again. Right? Pretty basic. Right? And this is probably something, if you start watching it, it's a big part of your day. You know, and it can be, you know, mildly stressful from a little anxiety to full-blown panic. For me, I've had this sort of interesting experience with fear because I've had, histrionically, a lot of sort of big events in terms of trauma and loss and difficulty that I have this sort of hypervigilant fear where, like, I kind of have this low-grade sense of waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, and there's a little bit of wisdom in that because, I mean, shit, I almost got killed on a motorcycle like 6 weeks ago. Like, the other shoe can actually drop. And for those of you who have seen the other shoe drop, it's hard to convince the mind in that moment that everything's okay. Because you're like, I got a lot of evidence to suggest this shit not going to be cool. You know? And that other shoe is going to drop. And so, you know, what do we do with that? You know, how do we manage that kind of fear? Because that can be debilitating. And so when we look at, you know, our, you know, part of it is like, you know, so in Buddhism we use this word perception, which is a big part of mindfulness, is actually, in its truest form, is trying to, if mindfulness was working properly, we would be perceiving things accurately and clearly, and we would know how to respond to any given situation skillfully. That's why we do this. But I don't know about you, I don't have a whole lot of those kind of moments. You know, that's a fucking victory, the moment where I'm able to like be like, okay, I'm scared right now. What am I scared of? Actually, what I'm scared of is crazy. There's not a monster under the fucking bed. You know, a lot of the fears are really, really delusional. You know, but a lot of times the psychological experience becomes so fast and so quick to fix and to worry and to concern that we actually can't even unhook from that. It's got kind of vigilance to it. And, you know, that's been my experience of trying to come to terms with that in a very real way. You know, so one of the things that we do here, one of the suggestions, and, you know, maybe you know this or don't know this, but we have these metta practices, metta translating as loving kindness, typically, mostly kind friendliness is the actual accurate term. Metta comes from this Pali term, mitta, which means just friend. And metta actually is a verb. It's not a noun. It's not like you go out and you don't have metta, really. It's not something you can put your hands on. But it's something that you cultivate, and it's an intention and an attitude. And, you know, the historic story is that actually metta was taught as an antidote to fear. And that, you know, these monks, back in the time of the Buddha, were out meditating in the woods, in the forest, and they were afraid of the stories, they were afraid of the evil tree spirits and all these spirits that live in the forest. I just think they were scared of the dark and didn't want to admit to that, and they made these tree spirits. But the Buddha really said that the antidote to fear that we cultivate in the practice is loving kindness, or a sense of may I be at ease with that. So really what we're doing with fear is we're not getting rid of it because it's wrong and bad. We're acknowledging that it's present, that it's part of our lives, and we're trying to actually be friendly with that experience of fear. And we're trying to befriend it, which is a verb. It's a relationship. It's actually rested in the spirit of cooperation. Of like, fear is present. I need to learn how to work with fear when fear is present. And, you know, a lot of times I don't want to do that. I want to fix and adjust and calculate and predict and control so that way that fear that I have doesn't happen, which is exhausting. I don't know if you've ever done that, but it's just brutal. And so, you know, part of it is again, in mindfulness, we're trying to recognize that. And at the same time, like in the practice of emotional intelligence and a lot of the secular practices on how to deal with emotional experience, they would call it, we need to learn how to have an appraisal, which is sort of a present time, you know, I like this word appraisal actually, where you're like, okay, here's the landscape, here's the environment, here's what I'm afraid of, here's what's actually happening, right? And what that does is even just that recognition of the fact that it's present usually will calm you down a little bit. And it will calm you down a little bit. It will put you in a place where you're actually able to use the mind in a way that's skillful. Because the other thing that I think happens in Buddhist practice and meditation is that thinking gets a bad reputation. When you're meditating, you're not supposed to be thinking. It's like, well, good luck with that. Getting rid of thinking, getting rid of fear, good luck. But when we're able to recognize that we're in the fear state, we're able to actually use our thinking and our analysis and our ability to reason and to logic and to really calculate and be able to say, like, okay, like, can I work with this? One of the questions that they use that comes from one of the, I forget ones, there's so many Trungpas and, not Trungpas, but what do they call them in Tibetan Buddhism? Rinpoche. One of the Rinpoches, I don't know his name, but he has this practice that's really basic for fear that I love, where he says, to ask a question in these appraisal states of being, when we're aware and mindful of it, is it real and is it true? I've been using this a lot. One of my friends, Eve Ekman, who is a teacher in San Francisco, and she does a lot of emotional research. She was telling me about it many months ago. I use it all the time now. Because it's great, because a lot of times it's real, right? When you're scared, that shit is real, right? I don't know about you, but anytime I'm activated into an emotional state, it is very real, which makes it very convincing, right? So part of it is like, okay, it's really happening, I can feel it. I can feel sweaty or whatever, it's real. So we kind of befriend that, okay, I'm scared about this, I'm having fear right now. But is it true? You know, this is really a great way where we can use thinking and we can use some of our intelligence and our sensibility to to look at it. And a lot of times, if I can get into, is it true? A lot of times I'm like, well, it's usually like maybe true, because most of my fear is future-based. So we can almost add a third category of, is it real, is it true, is it maybe true? Because sometimes we predict things are going to happen, they're going to be bad, and sometimes we're right. You know, we're not always wrong. But that's the hook, right? That's the hook that keeps the whole mechanism going. It's, well, I don't know what's going to happen, but it might happen. I need to be prepared. And then I got 300,000 things I need to be prepared for that might happen. And I'm walking around with a lunatic. So again, we want to be able to just sort of be like, okay, like, well, is it happening right now? This is why, again, mindfulness is so good, because it brings us back into the body, it brings us back into our breath, it brings us back into our soundscape. We're like, okay, actually right now, this thing that I'm totally scared about is not actually occurring. And what that does is it allows us to basically move that fear into an objective category. Where it's like, okay, maybe that'll happen, that might happen. And a lot of times I find if I'm able to do that, a lot of us will start to recognize that we actually have the resources to manage it if it does happen. Right? One of my favorite definitions of stress, this word that we throw around, nobody seems to know the definition of, but stress, everyday stress, is a perception that we don't have the internal resources to meet the external demands of life. That's what it is. Stress is fear. That I don't have the resources. I'm not going to be able to handle the external conditions, the demands of life. And how many external demands of life are there? Endless. And so if that is pulled into my perception and that gets the fear gets pulled into that, I start to believe that, hey, all of a sudden I'm not going to be okay. This is definitely going to happen. I'm going to be screwed when it does. And that's really where I find when we get too far out into that territory, that's really where the suffering is. And the suffering happens, and then this self emerges. I'm this person who's weak, who can't manage these things. I'm not going to be able to work it out. I think of all the times in the past I wasn't able to work it out. I'm not going to be able to work it out again. I'm going to be living in a van down by the river. I'm fucked. I'm this person who can't do this thing. I can never do this thing. I always do it wrong. I always do it wrong. Right. You know, and that you can get stuck in that for a long period of time. Right. You know, so again, I think that we have to be realistic and very, and to some degree, some integrity around fear being a probably constant companion that is going to be with us. And it's actually really helpful, too, right? Fear is like, oh, they keep us alive. Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of times what happens out of this suffering around fear is that the relationship with fear and anger. I want to talk about anger a little bit. And the reason why this is on my mind, I was talking to my friend Eve again this morning for a long time, and one of the things she does is she does a lot of research. She's a researcher, so she's always doing these intense research projects which sound exhausting. But I get the benefit of hearing the outcome of the research without having to do any of the work. So I love talking to her. I'm like, so you did like 6 months of research, what's the gist? And I get like a paragraph of like data that's useful, right? I love stealing from smart people. But she did, and I was just in the hospital too, so we're talking about being in the hospital, and what she said is that she just did this research project about people who are in the hospital for long periods of time for operations and whatnot. And the study was on what is the biggest trigger of fear. And what is the biggest trigger of anger? So they did all this research, thousands of people, and basically said people in the hospital for a month to 6 months, something like me, surgery, period of time, and intense surgeries, people dealing with life and death. And the number one fear trigger for people in the hospital for long periods of time was fucking work. Not like, am I going to be okay? You know, am I going to be able to walk again? None of that. Like, I'm not at work right now, and, you know, I'm probably not getting all this shit done, and I'm not going to be able to make money. That it was people, their biggest trigger for fear was work and their jobs and getting back to work. And is my boss mad at me that I got hit by a motorcycle? Like, all this crazy shit. Right? Isn't that sad? Not like, am I going to be okay? Or like, you know, what's the diagnosis? None of that. I mean, that's in there. But number one research, you know, is that people mostly were stressed out and their fear was associated with their jobs or their work. Anger, the number one trigger for people who are in the hospital for long periods of time for anger is the people that are closest to them. The biggest trigger. Their loved ones, their parents, their family. The people that they value and love the most in the world are the biggest trigger for anger is that. Which is, again, pretty sad. This is like, again, to me, and where I'm going with this is the antidote to both of these really is metta and karuna. Loving kindness and compassion is actually the way out. It's really what needs to happen for us to be able to come to terms with these often debilitating emotions on some level. And then I got really happy because I was like, I didn't give a fuck about work at all. I was like, am I going to be able to walk? Am I going to be, I had a lot of, damage done to my reproductive organs, for lack of a better word. And like, I was like, is that shit going to work again? And they're like, oh, we're not really sure, we're doing some tests. The fucking ambiguousness of the doctors in the hospital is like, you cannot get a straight answer out of those people. They're like, we're doing some tests, I'm not really sure, usually this happens, but I'm like, so, maybe? Maybe I'm gonna, pee in a toilet again, on my own. Probably okay. It's like you can't. I tried so hard to get a concrete answer out of it, and I just couldn't get one. It's like I think that they're trained in medical school to not give you an answer. So I was just like, and it was interesting too because I didn't have a lot. Most of the anger I had was actually at myself. I had a couple of days, and I definitely had some periods of time of I grew up around motorcycles. I grew up around motorcycle culture. I've ridden motorcycles on and off my whole life. I got sober when I was 28, and I was like, okay, sobriety equals now I can get a motorcycle because I'm not going to be hammered on a motorcycle. But I didn't get one because I lived in Massachusetts where it snows half the year. And I moved to Tennessee, and I was going to get one, but I didn't really have the money or the whiff world. I couldn't really make it work. Now I'm out in California. Riding for 3 months, And it was like, I was so hard on myself because I was like, dude, you fucking done nothing better. It's dangerous. It's like, some people ride and for years. It's just one of those things. It's like, talk about fear again, right? It's like, you just don't know. You can get killed, injured in a car, you can get injured on anything, but it was like, I really had a couple of days and really some period of time where I was just really had a lot of anger on myself. Kind of almost like you actually knew this was going to happen. Like, you're the guy, right? There's always the 1%. I have on my bad luck socks. They say bad luck on them. And then they say shit luck. Because I do feel like I kind of have bad luck. I've just had a lot of shit go down. I'm like, I'm the guy who rides a motorcycle for 3 months and gets fucking clipped by a car and almost dies in the hospital, right? And I had that. And I have this view, too, right? I have this perception. This totally inaccurate perception a little bit that the world's kind of out to get me, right? And also this attitude that it's a little bit my fault for some crazy reason. So I the anger was there, but it was really self-directed, and I didn't have really any anger to the people that were close to me. The reason why I want to make such a play for one of the things that I think, mindfulness, great practice, I totally appreciate it. But I'll tell you what, mindfulness of hospital is not that fucking liberating. It was just like, cool, nothing to do. I'm in pain. Okay, I'm going to get some Dilaudid a little bit later and take a nap. And of course I have a problem with drugs and alcohol, so I'm like, that's even shady. But I'm just in so much pain. And a lot of fear too of and because of my the damage that was done to my reproductive organs, I had to wear a Foley catheter. I don't know if you know what a Foley catheter is, but it's unpleasant. It's basically a tube that goes inside your thing into your bladder. And I couldn't even I was fully dissociated from my lower body for weeks because I was like, I just know. I was just like, even when I put the blanket on, it was like right at my waist. I'm like, that's not happening right now. So I was in this upper body dissociative state because I just couldn't. I was so scared. You know, when I think about fear in the body, pain, you know, it's like, I'm not in that much pain right now. It's like, I go outside and sit on my porch and I just have this, I can cry at the gratitude, like, oh my God, I'm actually not in pain. And how much do we do that? How much do we actually appreciate the body when it's not hurting? You know? And it's like, even this fear, like a lot of times we associate fear as an emotion or something in the mind, but really I got this deep sense that fear is actually in my body. Like the whole body is just scared. You know, and I was able to, you know, Noah came down a bunch, and a lot of my Dharma friends came down a bunch, and of course, the Dharma people always get weird, and they're like, so, what's really going on, you know? How's your practice now? They want to, like, really know what's working for you. And I was like, mindfulness. I was like, man, I was like, the Brahma Vihara. I was like, I am so grateful for all those uncomfortable moments of sitting on my ass, saying phrases, trying to be kind, trying to cultivate compassion, because that was really my saving grace. It was just like my throat and my chest, my heart felt like it was this big. And I was just like this ongoing emotional sense of like, dude, you're gonna be okay. I fucking love you, man. Like, you're gonna be okay. And it was like, that was like the basic, like, go-to. That was like where my mind would go when I would get tripped out, when I would get scared, when I would get angry. You know, it was just like this. You know, it's like one of those things. It's like we talk about the practice oftentimes, and I talk about the practice in the realm of skills and qualities, right? It's like we practice all these skills, you know? I don't know about you, but you ever been doing like loving kindness practice or compassion practice and just you're not feeling it? Right? It doesn't matter. It will show up eventually. It's like me and Mike were nerding out in the car down here about Buddhist psychology and karma. And it's like just the intention that you have in the mind, the intention to be kind to yourself, to say the phrase, may I learn to care about my suffering. Or whatever practices you do, whether there's images or phrases, there's lots of creative ways we work with those. You're going to get that moment later on down the road. I truly believe that. You don't know when. It's like you toss that football out into the future and eventually you get to catch it. You don't know when, you don't know how, you don't know where. But all of that karma, every time we do these practices, whether it's an awareness practice, a mindfulness, you're going to get the benefit of that moment later on. But we live in this immediate, you know, gratification culture. It's like, I'm doing loving kindness. I want to radiate loving kindness inward, out, in all directions right now. That's not the point. Really not the point. Even the word meditation is such a bad word. It doesn't even show up in early Buddhism. The word is bhavana, it's cultivation. The Buddha is asking us to cultivate particular qualities of mind, of awareness, of recognition, of understanding, and qualities of heart, of non-harming, of being able to meet fear with kindness, your biggest fears, and be able to be like, okay, to be able to care, you know, to have compassion for yourself and for others. And, you know, when we look at the, I don't even want to get out on the landscape, but when, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be scared right now. You know, there's a lot of shit going on in the world. You know, we live in a fucking trauma-creating machine of a world, you know? And, you know, a lot of times I feel like, you know, I used to be an activist, and I don't do that so much anymore, but I hear, like, you know, like a lot of the activist stuff, which I appreciate, is like, a lot of it seems like it's rooted in anger and fear. I just feel like, you know, like I love what the Dalai Lama says, like everybody wants to smash the system and it's all about them. Who are they?
Like, well, those people.
Like, who are those people? Do you even know one of those people?
I know.
I saw one on the highway with a fucking bumper sticker. It's like, they, those people, them. You know? And if you want to change the world, you change your mind. You know, you change your mind, you change the world. You know, when we bring this awareness and these practices into our direct experience, and I think the Dalai Lama said it, and it's one of the things that he said that I found to be most resonant, where he's like, when people ask him, like, how are we going to, you know, the world sucked, and like, how are we going to change it? And he said, man, one person at a time. One person at a time. Who's in front of you? Who are the people you interact with every day? Change, do the change in your daily life. Be kind and be compassionate be aware, be fucking generous to those people that you actually see every day. And forget about those people. There are no those people. They don't even exist. You know, then we create the self and other. And we create separation. And I'm right and you're wrong. And when you create separation, anger is just like ripe to arise. I'm right. You're wrong. I'm a good person. You're a bad person. And you need to change. Have you ever been on the receiving end of that? Has anybody ever been mad at you and told you you needed to change? How open were you to that information? All right. Probably not there. So for me, it's been interesting to see what is it that has been, you know, important. You know, it's like I live in a different. I mean, I can't tell you, everything is different than it was 7 weeks ago. It's all different now. You know, and it's like, you know, we talk about right view a lot of times in the practice as sort of the first path factor. And I think a lot of us think we have right view, but I think that right view is the hardest path factor of all. Because we mostly don't have like you. Mostly we have delusion, anger, fear. We get caught up, right? But I've known my whole life, you know, and I've known from my direct experience that the ground I'm standing on is very, very thin. And that the shit can fall out at any time. Doesn't mean I want to live a fear-based experience. But having been so close to that again, just having a deep appreciation for like, you know, I'm going to make some changes. You know, like, I could not be sitting here right now. That was like fucking in the cards not that long ago. You know, and I look at some of the things I do in my life, and I mostly like my life, and I appreciate what I get to do, but, you know, it's like, there's some things I'm just like, you know, I'm just not really fucking going to do that anymore. You know, like, this thing, you know, I think we all suffer from the delusion. I don't. I suffer from the delusion that I'm going to live long and get old and die when I'm 90, right? It's like, maybe not. You know, maybe that's not going to happen for me. And one thing else I want to add about anger is I think Buddhism or insight traditions or whatever you want to call it, I think, you know, I don't think it's been intentional, but I think anger gets a really bad reputation in a room like this. Like, if you're a good Buddhist, like, you shouldn't get angry. And actually, to some degree, I was talking to another teacher recently that one of the things that's starting to come out of the first generation of Dharma teachers is that they're starting to admit and starting to recognize, they're like, yeah, we got the anger thing not so right. Because there's a lot of these older teachers and people who've been practicing Buddhism for a long time, and later in their life, they're like, man, I got a lot of repressed anger. Like, I'm fucking angry. You know, and we can get into this because of the fact that we talk about the three poisons, or we talk about the root causes of suffering being greed, hatred, and delusion. Anger fits pretty good in the hatred box, that we think that we're not supposed to have this feeling. You know? And if you look at, you know, back to anger and fear from an evolution standpoint, they arose into the human experience because they had a role. They helped us survive. The role of fear was allowing us to respond to a threat. That's what fear is. It allows us to respond to a threat. And I've already talked enough about fear. But the role of anger, actually, anger exists to remove obstacles. So if we're confronted with an obstacle, a challenge, anger is what allows us to work through that. So if we don't have enough of anger, or what they would call like Peter Levine would call it, healthy aggression. That we all need to have some healthy aggression. And that a lot of us become passive aggressive, or we repress our anger, we become conflict avoidant, we don't stand up for ourselves, we don't advocate for ourselves, we back down, we get trampled on. Because we're not able to actually use anger in a way that is productive. And the way that they look at emotions, and these emotions, especially anger and fear, In sort of the Buddhist secular lexicon, which I think is a good emergence, is that no emotions are, like, saying that there's positive and negative emotions is not a good way of engaging. That what they do is they put them in that emotions are either constructive or destructive. And what we want to be able to do in our practice, in our life, is we want to be able to have a constructive relationship to all of the emotions. So that way when we're angry, and anger arises, we're able to have a constructive, useful relationship so that we can remove the obstacles and overcome the challenges that we face. But how many of you recognize that when you become angry, you back down? Right? People take advantage of us and then we get pissed off later. That's what used to happen to me. People used to piss me off and I used to go tell everybody on the fucking planet, except for the person I was angry with. Well, you're not going to believe this shit. You ever do that? Today? Right? And, you know, to some degree, it's just, then we get into this sort of like shit-talking stuff. It's just totally destructive. But it's hard too, right? I don't know about you. I will go out of my fucking way to avoid conflict. You know, but a lot of times, I've noticed it, especially in the last couple of years, because I'm a little bit more willing to deal with conflict, you know, I've had some pretty high intensity situations where I stayed and, you know, and the outcome was much better because I actually was able to advocate and stand up for myself. And the reason I was able to do that was because I was able to actually work with the anger in real time experience. And some of the people that I work with a lot of people in prison and jails and treatment. One of the things that happens to people who have maybe had a violent past or a difficult past is sometimes, this happens in men particularly, is that they become afraid of their anger because of the fact that maybe they've gotten angry before and they've done things that, you know, were violent or whatever. And so that a lot of times there can be a bypass that created that, like, you know, kind of like the Incredible Hulk style shit, like you wouldn't like being angry. And so that there can be creating a system where we kind of get into a bypass or a repression of that experience. And then when we need to use anger constructively, we're unable to do so. And so these are, you know, I think if you give your attention on any given day to either of these or some of these things I'm talking about, the reason I like to talk about this is I feel like this is a common event. You know, this isn't something that's going to happen from time to time. You know what I mean? This is something that you're going to probably deal with tomorrow when you get up. And I hope this is helpful, and it's good to be back in the room.